But it's padding, but it doesn't work. I think that's the problem. Is I don't mind being a bit of padding, but it's too silly, too sanitized. I think having Painful and Richard wandering around 20th century Windsor or wherever, I think it's fun. I like that. But these two goons who they don't even murder, it just felt just out of sync.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Casturbers. My name is Christian Cawley, and this week we're kicking straight into the commentary of episode 2 of Silver Nemesis, the 1988 Doctor Who 7th Doctor serial, the official 25th anniversary story.
It's a funny thing because it's a logo which feels like a period which is trying to break away from traditional typography and trying to be a bit more 80s jazzy, but it just doesn't work. I'd rank it below even the 2005 logo, which is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So here comes the police box.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, mine's just appeared before yours. So we're into episode 2 of Silver Nemesis now as part of our commentary, talking over the television. I really hate it when people talk over the television. But if you're joining us for this, the title sequence is just about to finish. And Silver Nemesis by Kevin Clark has appeared on the screen. And Kevin Clark actually appears as a tourist in the Windsor Castle scenes.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's funny about people talking over stuff. Long-term listeners to this garbage heap of a podcast may remember Magnus, and I've been watching Babylon 5 with Magnus, who'd not seen it before, and watching it while they're on Discord, and can tell they don't want to talk while they're watching it. Well, I do.
Yeah.
Because some people just like to sit and absorb, even if first time, second time, they just like that approach. I like to explore what it's making me feel and think. Cybermen. Again, I didn't mind this update. The gloves I thought were kind of fun. Both of them enjoying a little bit of their stunt work. Again, what is this place? I mean, I know it's a hangar, but you know, that wreck of a car which they've just been hiding behind. McCoy is massively dirty there.
Yeah.
Look at his jacket.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to have a look at the production notes. I always assumed it was some sort of Dockland area. It doesn't actually say... Oh, right, okay. The Doctor and Ace meet and combat the Cybermen on the site that later became the Millennium Dome.
Really?
Yeah.
Other people have argued, and with reason, I guess, that the gold allergy for the Cybermen gets out of control in this episode, and I can get that.
Yeah. I'm not against that argument.
I mean, it's fun. And this episode is one that just spins along. So I don't mind it for that reason. It just comes part of the action. But, you know, when it was meant to be a metal which, coated when it got hot in those breathing systems and would sort of coat their breathing respiratory systems and suffocate them, which is pretty grim. And now, you know, just a literally are allergic to the touch of gold. But in a weird way, I kind of like that, especially at this point with Silver Nemesis, and they are silver, and they are, their enemy is gold. There's a weird sort of like a metaphysical, yeah. I don't know. The only substance to which they are vulnerable. Big Finish did some sort of retro, and I think there's a long conversation about Gold and the Cybermen, which is really interesting. I'm trying to remember the details of it, about how that allergy appears and why. Because, you know, at some points it's obviously not really there. This was an interesting thing as well, from a nerdy point of view, that if something's attached to the TARDIS, it will go with the TARDIS. The arrow in the...
Yeah.
Which is obviously for a plot point for later on. But one would argue, you know, a plasmic shell, which is a facade of wood slash concrete, you wouldn't think that an arrow with a with a soft gold tip would perhaps...
No, probably not.
...break it, but, you know, okay.
In fact, I'd worry that it would... even real wood.
Yes, very true. A lot of low angles of Cybermen in this to try and make them look taller,
yeah, yeah.
Which I respect.
So this is... I was going to say they've repainted them, haven't they? They're very shiny in this as well, again for the silver. I remember when I first rekindled my appreciation of Doctor Who, or rather, I wasn't even that really. It was just I rediscovered it in 1994 via a special edition of Doctor Who magazine, which was a part Silver Nemesis and part Unearthly Child. It was like split down the middle, and you'd flip it over, so like it was, you'd turn it over, and there's a lot of like the, you know, the publicity shots and off camera shots and stuff in there, and I remember really liking the design of the Cybermen in it, and the little Cybercon dock thing that they've got, the little, it's not a cyber control, is it called a cyber controller? I can't remember in the dialogue or not. It's basically like a little six-sided thing that they have that is quite narrow on that. I just really appreciate the whole design of it, and the magazine really, I spent a lot of time poring over the details. This is in the days when I was buying like Matrix, the Universal Data Banks and stuff like that from W.H. Smith, and getting into the New Adventures as well. That was all around the same time in 94.
The golden era.
Well, I mean, in many ways it was.
Yeah. One of the few golden eras to exist without the actual artifact that is golden.
Hmm. Well, you've got Star Wars as well, haven't you? Which really had a similar sort of era around the same sort of time. Watch those fences. Or
look
the trees.
Out the shadows.
Trees. Yeah.
No shadows. No, fine. Yep, let's labour this. I'll give them credit. I like the fact that they actually did it so it looked like it came, there was like a layer where it actually landed.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they got out with a mower beforehand. We already have been poor ones.
That's our problem. Money. Yeah, I mean, this I felt at the time.
Well, it's padding, isn't it? Which seems bizarre for a three-parter.
But it's padding, but it doesn't work. I think that's the problem. I don't mind it being a bit of padding, but it's too silly and too sanitized. I think that they just shouldn't have done it. Having Painful and Richard wandering around 20th century Windsor or wherever, I think it's fun. I like that. But these two goons, who they don't even murder, which is really what Richard would do. It just felt just out of sync. This is a fun space for the Cybermen, all that light. His costumes must have been a pain. So this...
Yeah, but burn their clothes, why not?
But leave them their underwear, which is meant to be slightly cheeky underwear as well. And it's just like, get in the bin. I remember when it first came on, for some reason, I had, ADHD, which I didn't realise at the time. totally somehow forgotten that it was on, and I was really annoyed that I came in at the back end of this episode and missed episode two. And a friend, I think, had videotaped it, so I got to see it and invariably was disappointed with what I saw. Of all the three episodes, retrospectively, it's the one that I'm always happy to miss. And I think I'd videoed the other two, so in my own collection, My Silver Nemesis missed episode two and didn't really feel like it lost anything for it. There's nothing real. They pulled out the old prop, the old cyber prop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing I was trying to allude to earlier. Yeah, yeah.
But isn't that also in one of the earlier ones? Isn't that also in Earthshock?
I think there's a larger, I think it's a redesigned one or a completely different one. But yeah. But yeah, I think the designer, it's a lot cleaner, I think. I think it's smaller than one in Earthshock, I'm not sure.
I mean, I loved this as well, with the two of them just laying around mid-mission, having fun.
Yes.
You know, you got a sense, given that Ace was a character which joined the Doctor just because, really. She didn't really want to get home. Very much like the new series companions. But I did kind of feel like she was the sort of person who would enjoy this. While so many of the companions you get, like Rose, who I never felt was really set out, would never really enjoy this sort of world. I always felt that Rose would always kind of like going places where, like a 21st century teenager, where there's like parties and big
sunshine,
things to see and stuff to record,
beaches.
And video and beaches. And yeah, I don't think this sort of stuff would be her space, but it would be Ace's space, while the stuff that Rose would enjoy would be stuff that Ace just wouldn't go with.
The space of Ace.
Yeah. I guess. And without my knowledge, you cannot return at all. I tell you, Richard, either you'll assist me and we gain it, or I'll leave thee here forever. Now come. And again, all this stuff is, it's nice. What place is this? And it sort of does a lot for their weird relationship, but... I mean, this is interesting stuff as well. I don't mind it. If it was more of this, episode two as a filler would be fine. In fact, to be fair, I think for me, episode two's frustration is the two guys.
Mm.
I mean, this I quite like. It's unneeded.
It is, but it adds some. Yeah, but it adds the whole challenge of what's happening and whether they might actually be successful as well. If he's going to die in whatever year and he's in the future at the moment, then presumably he's going to get home, so maybe
which he does
yeah, as we know, but it adds to the tension a little bit. Death is but a door.
But I also love, again, and I suppose I've always loved the escapism in TV where you can go to different places on a small scale. There's just so much variety in this story.
Yeah.
Well, you think Doctor Who as we've said before, traditionally is always like three studio locations, largely, and then running between the three of them for various reasons. You know, where the show starts, I mean, to a degree, yeah, it does go back to there at the end, but, you know, the bits in the countryside here with them lounging around, well, I can't say it, the jazz piece, lounging, thank you, the crypt, the Nazi home base, you know, there's just so many little Windsor Castle.
It's actually Arundel. I think it's Windsor from the long shot, but once they're actually on location, it's Arundel.
I think the fascinating...
which I've never been thing, to.
Again, is for the sake of the story, to some degree, Cybermen are just wandering around. No police. No concern from anyone. No one sees any of this.
Well, yeah, there's no explanation of how they get from A to B either, is there? Other than their big space. Well, I mean, it's got to be their spaceship, hasn't it? So there is an explanation, but like no one's noticing it is the takeaway from that.
So I suppose you've got to argue that you're in a place where there's no internet, there's no like social alert system like you'd have now, because someone would see this, snap it on their phone, it'd go up, news would pick it up.
Yeah.
So if the police don't see it, if people don't report it, like the Canary Wharf, no one would have probably seen that. Now they're in the countryside, no one would really see that. And we imagine that the ship has some sort of cloaking facilities in terms of radar and the like.
So well, we'll find out that later on. So, yeah.
So in a weird way, yeah, they could wander around to some degree with no
yes
engagement of even UNIT.
Destroy them. Destroy them. We cannot sustain these losses, you know. We must withdraw.
No. I mean, the funny thing is, for me, if I was a Cyberman and I was aware that the touch of gold, be it a propelled coin or an arrow, could kill me, I'd perhaps wear a leather jacket.
Maybe. Or have not a weakness on my right in front of me. Yeah.
I would even consider getting a ceramic plate.
A ceramic plate? Or maybe even, and hear me out, a cricket bat.
They are set up at the moment for cricket bats. Whether they realise it or not, those gloves are perfect somehow. I mean, I suppose this is one of the only bits in the second episode which is actually perhaps quite important, how they get rid of the ship and thus no other Cybermen, but you don't still really need it.
Nice model, that. But sadly short-lived.
Yeah.
I've always liked obviously it looks dated now, and it wasn't 100% convincing at the time, but I've always liked the effect of the Cyberman ship and, you know, how it's basically they walk out of a corridor in a door and it's keyed on and that. I always thought it looked good.
I mean, I think, again, to young people, it's always worth mentioning this, is that it wasn't that any of this fooled people at the time.
No.
It's not like people were naive and couldn't see the effects or even understand how they were made. You could, but you just accepted it.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it became a bit of its... It's one of the things I've always hated about CG is that if it becomes seamless, it becomes invisible, it becomes unappreciated. But a matte painting is always visible. You can, 9 times out of 10, tell it's a matte painting, but you can still enjoy the artistry in it.
Yeah.
What happened to the actor who's playing Richard?
I think he passed away a few years ago.
Oh, that's a shame.
If I remember rightly, Gerard Murphy passed away in 2013. He's from Northern Ireland.
No. I don't recall seeing him in much.
No,
but then I was never...
Lots of theatre.
Lots of theatre?
Yeah.
That does not surprise me.
No.
We want to talk to you. I don't know if you're familiar...
It's funny to think this would have been the last appearance of the Cybermen till Age of Steel, Rise of the Cybermen.
Yes.
Cybermen Age of Steel.
Apart from that head in Dalek.
Yes, that is true.
And it's also the last appearance of Anton Differing, who made lots of movies in which he played Nazis. Although... he was German. Yeah, I was wondering whether he might actually have been Belgian, but no, he was actually he was German.
I was going to say it's an unexpected career trajectory. You perhaps wouldn't predict.
Well, certainly later on, because he was German, so maybe you think, well, maybe I don't want to do that after everything that's happened. And he was born in 1916, so his early life.
But then
he was Jewish, so.
But I mean. At least he's German, with
yes.
Michael Shard, and his continual appearances as Hitler through his career. He wasn't even German. He just had the look, which is probably a weird thing to feel. It's a weird thing with the Cybermen is that you can see why David Banks keep coming back, because you compare it to the other Cybermen, and he's got so much more... so much more in the space than the others are.
Yes, he does.
Standing, he's acting through that.
It's just interesting thing about Anton Dufresne. He actually worked for the War Office as an interpreter during World War II.
Isn't this is the weird bit for the outro of two where he spots a chameleon, or he spots a lizard and thinks that they're a chameleon and thinks they're cloaked. Now,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure I've never seen in this country. Is it just meant to be a lizard and then he makes the leap?
I think it is meant to be a lizard and he makes a leap. Yeah.
It's a big leap.
It is. Well, it's not a huge leap.
Or is it just that the lizard just has the mottling that's similar to the wood and therefore...
We'll find out in a moment, won't we? Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, it's coming up soon. We're almost at the end of two, I'm sure.
Yep.
There's nothing else of nothing else that can happen. Yeah, 70s and 80s TV lived and died by reflective surfaces, which you could reflect light on and for it to bounce back. Reflective paints and stuff. See, it's interesting again how... Do we see him fire any arrows into people? I don't think we do, even though we assume that he might have hit someone. Well, I'd hate to disagree. I mean, if you ingested gold, you do have weaknesses to gold, mate.
Yeah,
you
and
do
also
have weaknesses to gold.
Those arrows would probably pierce your skin as well.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure, Anton, if we put you in an arena with a Cyberman, and you, even if you put a little bit of gold in that arena as well.
And Carl is played by a gentleman called Metan Yenal. This is an awful Wikipedia entry. For a couple of years, he was in a relationship with composer Peter Maxwell Davies before being dumped for a younger man. Wikipedia is really awful these days.
These days? I thought it's always been...
Well, there was a time when it was quite good, but that's an awful thing. Why would anyone write that on Wikipedia? It's absolutely irrelevant.
Here we go. This is the... Coming up. I don't remember that shot of the planet. They're shrouded.
Yes, they're shrouded. It's not a cloaking device, it's a shrouding device.
But I still find that lizard a really odd point of connection. I wonder if it sort of felt better in the script than it did actually when doing.
Yeah.
But it worked, I guess. I find, and I always did, those warships really hard to discern their shape.
Mm. They seem to be long and thin, but it's not...
I can't really work out what they are.
I think maybe they made half of a design and then stuck it together in several places and then had the other half just at the edge of the screen. Perhaps.
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 I don't know. Skinheads. They were labelled as skinheads.
Of course they were. So that's the end of episode 2 of Silver Nemesis. James and I will be back in a few days' time to talk about episode 3. Now, there's a few other things going on in the world of Doctor Who, as you probably know. So James and I will also be along soon to talk about those recovered episodes from the Daleks' master plan. We should also tell you that what you've just listened to, Self-Nemesis, has already gone out on our Patreon. All three parts went out on our Patreon a couple of weeks ago. You get the podcast early on Patreon. You get it ad-free on Patreon. None of the Spotify ads, none of the ads from the other services. It's all ad-free. You also get access to the Casterbus archive, where we have interviews and ebooks and other material from the old Casterbus website. Videos of interviews, videos of events. By heading to patreon.com/Casterbus, you can join other listeners of Casterbus by getting the podcast early and getting access to all that additional material. We have a special offer. There are 7 remaining spaces for you to get access to the podcast early for just £1 a month. And that is ongoing, recurring. But as I say, there are only 7 spaces left for that. You will get the podcast early, ad-free, and you also get a free copy of the Ultimate Regeneration ebook, which is a collection of reviews of every Doctor Who between 2005 and 2010. Alternatively, you can get a free 7-day trial to Casterbus with the Patrons with a K package. This gives you ad-free listening, early access to every podcast, exclusive episodes and formats, exclusive access to the Casterbus archive, weekly updates with information about what is coming up, access to our Patreon archive, that's everything that we've published previously on Patreon. You'll also get a shout out, and you can also request topics for discussion on the podcast. So there are options for you to join Casterbus on the Patreon and to support our efforts. And this helps us to pay for hosting costs and buy new mics and other equipment, and helps us build the podcast towards some other projects that James and I are interested in doing. And we need your support to do that. So that's over on patreon.com/Casterbus. You'll find a link to that in the show notes. Support us there and help us to build the podcast up. If you can't do that, then it would be great if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a few words with your name, it will get read out on the podcast. We'll be back with more Silver Nemesis soon and some Daleks Master Plan words and thoughts. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.